Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Hello again, everybody. Coming up in about 15 minutes, civil rights historian Taylor Branch on the 50th anniversary of the I Have a Dream speech and an oral history of the day featuring some of you. But first, dogs. This week, news broke that the Obamas have welcomed a furry new member to their family. Maybe you've heard, the Portuguese water dog and little sister to Beau that they have named Sunny. And clearly the White House has dogs on the brain, having recently issued a statement titled, "Breed-specific legislation is a bad idea." Breed-specific legislation is a bad idea in response to an online petition criticizing laws and regulations that restrict ownership of certain dog breeds like pit bulls and Rottweilers. If you live in NYCHA housing, for example, this is an issue you're very familiar with, as 27 breeds are banned from the public housing projects in New York City. I'm joined now by Nancy Perry, Senior Vice President of ASPCA Government Relations. Nancy, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks so much for having me, Brian.
Fill us in on what exactly the president said, and did you see it coming?
Actually, this came as a bit of a surprise, and it was interesting that they timed the announcement with their addition of Sunny to the White House. But we think it's great when we're talking about dogs. It's pretty hard not to want to talk about some of the problems that communities are causing by trying to address dangerous dogs through this breed-specific or breed-discriminatory policy approach, which the ASPCA strongly rejects.
So we know that your organization is opposed to breed-specific legislation, and you just reiterated it there. But aren't some dogs more violent than others if they're treated or trained certain ways that some breeds, I mean, a dog, okay, yes, a dog has to be either trained to or mistreated into being violent in most cases. But are some dog breeds not more prone to that?
Well, it's a great question. There's really no data that would support the idea that breeds in and of themselves are dangerous. The whole attempt to address breed-specific legislation is to bring out the fact that right now owners are actually punished unfairly if they're responsible dog owners. And none of the data that we've seen from any jurisdiction, including local, county, state level, where they have instituted a ban or regulation on specific breeds, has ever yielded any positive results in the form of less dog bites, less incidents. It just isn't there. And in fact, what we see is a counterproductive response where the community spends a great deal of money trying to enforce an unenforceable prohibition, and they are sending these dogs kind of underground. Owners try to avoid the detection of their dogs, and that leads to them not having proper socialization, not getting out for exercise. It's literally the exact opposite of what you want for dog behavior to be healthy and positive for the community. So they're seeing dramatic results when the right kind of policies are instituted, breed-neutral policies, but no data supports the idea that banning a breed or regulating a breed actually yields positive results.
I see our phones are starting to light up already on this without me even having given out the phone number during this segment. I'm going to be curious to see if those are pro-pit bull people or anti-pit bull people. Mm-hmm. But listeners, anybody can call 212-433-WNYC. Maybe you have a story about a pit bull or a Rottweiler or whatever who's a very sweet dog, wouldn't hurt a fly. And we want to hear specifically about laws and regulations, either here in New York or elsewhere, that maybe you've had to deal with that you thought were unfair or maybe that you think protect you. What rules have you encountered that target your own dog? How do you get around them? If that's relevant to you, give us a call on anything pertaining to breed-specific legislation, 212-433-9692. And New York State is an interesting case. Because the state itself prohibits breed-specific legislation on the state level. So the New York State Legislature may not pass anything like that. But here in the city, NYCHA housing, there are 27 banned breeds, including variations on pit bulls and mastiffs and Boston terriers. So why do you think these breeds get restricted?
Well, it's interesting jurisdictionally. And let me just say that the initial policy that NYCHA released did include a ban on 27 breeds. That was in 2009. And then in 2010, they actually made some adjustments to their policy, and they did reduce the number of breeds that they ban, and now it's literally down to three.
Those three?
And those three are pit bulls and Rottweilers and Dobermans.
Okay.
But they also include any mix of those breeds. So we start to get into some pretty murky territory there. They also reduced the weight restriction. Initially in 2009, they said you could have dogs that were up to 40 pounds, and then they reduced it down to 25 pounds arbitrarily. And so they've put a lot of dog owners in a terrible place, and a lot of dogs have unfortunately suffered horrible fates as a result of this policy.
So when you look at the demographics of pit bull ownership specifically, could one make the argument that breed-specific legislation unfairly targets minorities, or even that it's fear of black and Latino people as much as fear of these breeds of dogs that are behind some of these restrictions?
Oh, that's so interesting. Well, I'm sure many people do take that leap, and it may well be something that needs to be explored legally. I think, you know, on the face of it, we already know that if you're trying to make a community healthy, this is the wrong way to go. So whether or not there's discrimination of people on top of discrimination on dogs, I mean, that's obviously a more complicated question. But why should NYCHA be engaging in this sort of policymaking when we know the data shows that this doesn't work and that it's completely ineffective? And, you know, NYCHA is really New York City's biggest landlord. They have 8.3% of the city's rental apartments, 5% of the city's residents. That's a huge population to just rule out of adopting those breeds from our local shelters in New York. It just seems such a shame and so costly and so ineffective. It's very unfair.
People are calling in on this from Brooklyn to Yonkers to Denver. Let's talk first to Jim in Brick. Hi, Jim. You're on WNYC.
Oh, hi. Yeah, I used to be in Hudson County, and I had a pit bull, and also just in a private home, insurance companies weigh breeds, and I think it just warrants noting that different breeds, when you say are dangerous, it's to whom. So pit bulls can be problematic with other dogs, but they're usually very people-friendly. In fact, they're tolerant of a lot of abuse that the people who do abuse them mete out. And I think other breeds can be more problematic with people. I think the data was for chows regarding emergency room reports of people bites.
But even the idea that any breed would be inherently more prone to being dangerous to people seems to be rejected by our guest from the ASPCA and this movement. Jim, you think that's going too far, that they're kind of whitewashing something?
It's just helpful, to differentiate. And then when you do get into mixed breeds, as I said, it's not just in public housing. Insurance companies, their policy had, I know I had to have like a double fence so the dog wasn't approachable from the sidewalk. And if anything, as I said, I would have trusted the pit bull with children more than my other two dogs.
Or trusted the pit bull less with other dogs. Well, what do you think about any of his characterizations, Nancy?
Well, I think it's important to note that it's not just the humane community that has raised these opposition statements to breed-specific legislation, but the American Kennel Club, the American Veterinary Medical Association, the Center for Disease Control, the National Animal Control Association, even the U.S. Department of Justice has acknowledged that you can't peg behavior by a breed. You have to look at the owner's behavior, and you have to look at the dog's history. And you can actually institute policies on dangerous dogs that are effective. The the ASPCA thinks we should always incorporate spay-neuter programs and licensing and leash laws and anti-tethering measures and microchipping, but you can include steps to address reckless owners who have a history of having problems with their dogs.
If all breeds are created equal in this respect, though, why don't you see security dogs, dogs with, you know, police officers or that guard car lots? You know, you don't see a lot of golden retrievers and cocker spaniels there, if you know what I mean.
You don't, but that may just be by reputation, and they're looking for a kind of visual quality that may be a perception people have about dogs. You know, one thing that's interesting is laboratory retrievers are very commonly used by the military. And they, if they're trained to bite, they can bite. And yet they are considered one of the most child-friendly, family-friendly dogs around. So, you know, maybe not golden retrievers, but laboratory retrievers are frequently used in those lines of work. But, so it's really, it is a misnomer. And we have perceptions culturally around these different breeds. So that may feed into this discussion, and I think it causes communities to react in a really knee-jerk fashion when they're not really looking at the data. And I hope the White House announcement will help us be more thoughtful in our policymaking.
Let's talk to Henry, calling in from Denver, Colorado. Henry, are you a regular listener to this show, or did you just somehow hear we were doing this topic today?
Mr. Lair, I absolutely love you, and I love your show. I love the interweb, too.
Yeah, we love the interweb.
I absolutely love your show. Okay, let me get to BSL. I'm sorry.
Go.
I believe that BSL is absolutely detrimental in destroying the American Pit Bull Terrier. It does nothing but perpetuate myths that are simply not accurate and not true. The lady that you have with the ASPCA can speak to the fact that they did a 100-dog study, and the Pit Bull, the American Pit Bull Terrier, fell within the bottom 5% of that study. The Labrador Retriever was, I believe, the number one dog. There is no such thing as lockjaw. It's just, it's a myth. The dog just doesn't want to let go. You know how you, when you're at the doctor's office and they hit your knee with the little thing and your foot flies up in the air?
Yeah.
Most dogs have the exact same reflex in the back of their mouth. That's why responsible owners carry a braking stick. As soon as you hit that reflex in the back of their mouth pops open. The American Pit Bull Terrier is very submissive to people, extremely submissive to people. They just do not. They're not understood. I don't know how else I can say it. I mean, I'm somebody who truly understands the breed understands that they are being misunderstood and that the breed is taking the brunt of the owner's responsibility.
And again, reinforcing the idea that it is the owner's responsibility. Henry, thank you so much. Call us again. Nancy Perry, we're going to run out of time soon, and my guest, Nancy Perry, from the ASPCA on breed-specific legislation. What do you think the significance of the announcement from the White House is joining the call to end breed-specific legislation? Do you think it has any policy implications at the national or various local levels?
I think it does. I think when the president speaks, you know, we all know all politics really are local. And I think that he has a bully pulpit to speak to this issue of bully breeds, if you'll excuse the pun. And, you know, he can really help us think about what works and what has worked, and a more thoughtful, calm, deliberate process for ensuring that communities are safer makes a lot of sense. Our gentleman from Henry called in from Denver, and they've experienced the negative sides of this policy. So he knows, you could tell, he's experienced this. They have not been able to reduce their dog bite rates, despite having a BSL policy for a long time now. So, you know, if we want to make sense, and in a time of economic strife, we really have to make sure our policies are productive and give us the results that we need. And this is a costly, ineffective approach to making communities safer for dogs and for people.
Nancy Perry is the Senior Vice President of ASPCA Government Relations. Thank you so much.
Thank you.